What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode here on Whiskey Throttle Media. I'm your host, Brent Bowser. Before we jump in the podcast, I want to give a shout out to Factory Connection for coming on board and sponsoring our podcast. They're a big supporter of Whiskey Throttle Media. Lots of our test bikes have Factory Connection suspension on them, and they just do really good work. They've been around a long time. They offer lots of different services for your suspension, full rebuilds, revalve, pretty much everything suspension related that you need, you can get done at Factory Connection. So if you haven't had a chance, go on to factoryconnection.com and see what products and services they have available. We're here today with Gas rider Landon Peppard. What's going on, Landon? How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, can't complain. It's cool to get you on here and kind of dive into who you are personally and obviously talk to you, you know, obviously on the moto side of things. But before we get started, just go ahead and give us a little bit of background on yourself. You know, where you grew up, how old you are, just things that people who don't know who you are would like to know about you.
Yeah, I'm stoked to be on here. I think it's really cool what you guys are doing with this. And I'm 17 years old from a small town in Alaska. Not super small. I don't live in igloos or anything, but Alaska boy, born and raised. And then Ben LeMay is, his dad was neighbors with my grandparents, and he got me into the sport. He was basically like a grandpa to me. And then Ben was living down here, so he was basically like, oh, you should go down to the lower 48 and just see what happens. So that first year we came down here and we're just hitting whatever race we possibly could. And somebody said, you should try for Loretta's. And we're like, what's Loretta's?
No kidding.
Completely clueless.
Yeah.
And that year was super fun. We ended up accidentally qualifying for Loretta's. We honestly didn't know what it was. Went to the regionals and they were like, I think we qualified. And I ended up doing the Supercross Junior Challenge that year.
Oh, cool.
Las Vegas.
Oh, sweet. That. Yeah.
And I went to Monster Cup. And I did the Arena Cross Championship thing in Vegas, too. So that first year was eventful. And that's pretty much how we got started. And here we are today.
So are you still based in Alaska? I mean, obviously, it's not the hotbed of motocross stars, right? So are you still based out of there? Or are you somewhere, you know, like Florida training and stuff like that?
I'm still an Alaska resident, and that's home. It'll always be home. We still got a house there and everything. But I am in Florida right now training at Moto Sandbox, getting ready for Daytona Futures.
Oh, perfect. And how long ago did you make that full-time switch, I guess, to start training here? Was it a long time ago, or you've just kind of been going back and forth?
It's gotten less and less over the years. I used to go home for months on end right after Loretta's and then come back down late January, and then it was come back down in November for Minios, and then it's been October and end of September. So it's just been getting less and less every year.
And so for people that, you know, when I think of Alaska, I just think of cold and like icebergs and sheets of ice and stuff. How is it living there? Do you miss it now being in Florida, or?
Oh, I miss it so much. Dude.
Okay, I was going to ask, have you adapted?
It's the winters get kind of tiring towards the beginning part. Like, obviously, the November to really February is pretty dark and cold.
Yeah.
And the weather's not great. But, like this time of year, we're starting to get more daylight and it's starting to get a little bit warmer. And man, it's so fun up there.
Seems like a totally different world.
Unbelievable.
Say that again?
The summers are just unbelievable.
Really? Okay.
I'm a huge fisherman, so we got a cabin up on a remote fly-in only. We got our own bush plane and we fly in and it's on a trout stream, and my middle name is Trout, actually.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. My dad was pretty into fishing when I was born.
That's cool. Man, yeah. When I think of Alaska, I just think of, especially where you're at in Florida, like totally two different worlds, right? I mean, Florida, humid and hot and, you know, nice but hot. But then you think of Alaska, probably dry and cold and just totally two different climates that you're living in.
Yeah, for sure. Alaska actually gets nice in the summers.
Okay.
Like, it's probably, on a super nice day, I'd say 75.
Mm.
but the sun never goes down.
Yeah, that's weird.
In the summers, so it's nothing cools down. Like down here, it gets super hot, but at night it gets colder, so it cools down. There, it's just hot all the time.
When you were growing up, like obviously, you know, you had school and stuff, but like in the summertime when you're out, if the sun was out and it was 3 a.m., were people still sleeping or people like just living life? I don't, it'd be weird if it was 3 a.m. and the sun was out.
Oh, it's trippy for sure, but it's so much fun. Like it's like a boost of energy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be doing something and look down and like, crap, it's like 1 in the morning. I got to go to bed.
Yeah, that's wild. Something you'd have to adapt to for sure. Cause, you know, as a kid, you're probably like, well, the sun's up. We can just go do whatever, you know, whenever. So,
exactly. Blackout curtains save lives.
Yeah, no kidding. So, did you, growing up there, did you go to public school or were you homeschooled because of writing?
I went to public school. I did kindergarten and first grade. And
okay.
Then that's when we started coming down here on and off.
Gotcha. So
then I went home school.
Yeah. And you know, you think of Alaskan writers, you had Ben LeMay, obviously, who was a really good amateur and, you know, still, you know, had still racing pro and been around a long time. And so that's cool. You guys were, you said you were neighbors. So it got you into all of that. And how old were you when you, was he already, cause you're 17 and, you know, he's a little older. So how old were you when you first started, you know, watching him ride? Was he already, you know, top amateur pro, or what was the time frame for that?
I think by the time I started watching him ride, as far as I remember, he was pro. He had just turned pro, possibly.
Gotcha.
But I remember, yeah, I would go over there to their house because Gene was neighbors with my grandparents, like I said. And he was teaching me how to weld and run stuff on the lathe. And this was before I was in kindergarten. So
oh,
he
yeah.
ruined for kindergarten.
Yeah.
My first day at kindergarten, they asked, oh, like, let's make patterns with these little bears. And I was like, bro, come on. Like,
no. Yeah, you're like, I'm not here for this.
No, I'm going to run stuff on the lathe.
That's cool. So I was looking back at, you know, some of your amateur stuff over the years. And like you mentioned, you started going to Loretta's in 2015 and you're on 50s. So that was really when it all first started. That was your first real year of racing and riding. When did you start riding? What age? How old were you?
I want to say I was 7 when I started.
Okay, so you weren't like old yet, but you weren't that, you know, 4 to 5 year old like some kids start.
No, I was hunting, fishing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know what a dirt bike was at that time.
So when did say, and you went? You know, you've been steady going to Loretta since when? When did you guys think that, you know, man, this is obviously you've been training in Florida, you know, over the years more and more. When was there a time or a year that you did really good and you guys decided, hey, you know, we're going to go all in and pursue this?
Not really. I mean, honestly, I think it was 14 the first year I went, and I got 38th on a 50. That was my first year. It was mud. It was a nightmare. I looped out on the sight lap. So it was just a learning curve. And then the second year I got a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But really the third year I went, I was on 10 to 11 65s. And I think I got a 10th in a moto. And that's when we were kind of like, all right, like we're making in progress, because I
mm-hmm.
think the or I was like 25th something, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Like way back there.
Yeah.
So then we were making progress and we were having fun doing it. So then we started coming back. And then next year, I actually did pretty well. I was 11 on a 65. And I got a hole shot in a moto. And I think I got third in a moto. And then I think I finished 7th overall in that class. So, like, that was a pretty good year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, next year was 85s.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal for, you know, You think you say you got a 10th in a moto at Loretta's, like maybe it's not good, but I mean, still that's a good finish. Just making it to Loretta's, not a lot of people, or I know lots of people that try and qualify that can't make it, right? So just making it there is an accomplishment itself, but also, that's just the place that as an amateur, you want to do well because it's the big spotlight on it. I know there's more things and we'll talk a little bit about it, Supercross futures and combines and stuff, but that's still kind of the important amateur race where I don't know how much pressure you guys put on yourselves when you go there still, but it's like, it's a make or break week. It seems like for the whole, the whole year you have a week of Loretta's and it's people tend to say it makes or break your year. So I don't know how you feel about that. Is there still a bunch of pressure for you when you go to Loretta's now, or because there's so many different things are building into the amateur program, do you feel like it's maybe not as important as it used to be?
I honestly don't think it's important as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of pressure is going on the Supercross futures and the combines.
Yeah.
I think a lot of pressure is going on the Supercross futures.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, like you said, making it to Loretta's is a big deal. And then I remember the first year I got out of the tent, I pulled in 10th and I was happiest kid in, under there.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Obviously now, if I'm not on the podium, it's
in the world.
Come on, what? We work too hard for this. We need to be throwing down podiums every moto. Like, we're contenders. We need to be up there. So, yeah, I put a lot of pressure on myself, I would say. And sometimes I feel like it could be a little too much and I need to enjoy it more. But obviously, I'm from Alaska. I don't live down here. This isn't. It's not home. It's a big deal for me to be down here. And it's a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice for me, my dad, like everybody that's helped me out. It's a big sacrifice. So I do put pressure on myself to perform. And I want to make some good impressions this year. I feel like last year at Loretta's, I got second overall, which has been my best finish ever in the school class, which... Yep. I was pretty happy with that. I felt like I rode pretty well.
Yeah, you finished second in Cochrane, so you had been pretty stoked with that.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that one.
Mm-hmm.
I always have bad luck at Loretta's. Like, it's the craziest things happen there every single year. I think one year on 85s, I was a contender. I think I was a top podium contender every moto. But I was blowing bikes up every moto. BHM had a bad batch of pistons and I was sticking rings every moto.
Jeez.
So I would be up front and then my bike would brrr. I'd limp it to the finish line and get whatever. And then 125s, I had a CDI box unplug in the rhythm or in the Ten Commandments. I had a spark plug completely break, like the porcelain part.
Wow. Yeah, not very common.
Yeah, then this my last year on 125s, my chain fell off in the last corner.
Can't make that up.
Pushed my bike over the line. And then I got a flat that year too.
Yeah, I remember hearing about a bunch of flats. That one year at Loretta's, I don't know if it was just because all the with all that water and it washed away some of that soil. I don't know. I just remember hearing about a bunch of flats that one year.
It was really weird that year. Like the track had a super hard base.
Mm-hmm.
But this last year, we didn't have bike problems, so we finally got to show some results, which I was happy with.
Yeah, and are you kind of glad to see the shift in the focus going to Supercross futures and moto combines? And if they, had they have kind of these mini series to where you have more time to kind of show yourself rather than, six motos at Loretta's and then that's it. It seems like a lot for one race to where, if they start doing these futures and moto combines, which are basically what you will be racing as a pro, are you happy it's going that route? Or do you think it's adding more pressure with those additional races?
I wish Loretta's would have had a little more weight thrown at it for at least one more year so I could have some more help from the
true
doing good, but I think the Supercross Futures program is really, really cool. I think, like, I did the one in Anaheim, and obviously I didn't do very well. But I couldn't imagine going out being a amateur and then going straight to the pro. Like, that would be very, very difficult. And I think it's really cool that the Supercross has the Futures program to where you can get your feet wet. Because, I mean, I remember walking in the tunnel for the track walk, and I was like, holy crap, like, this is insane. Like, I immediately started shaking almost. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
You watch it on TV your whole life, and then, like, now you're there doing it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, you know, guys like Villopoto and Dungy and even older guys, you know, Stewart and all those guys that turn pro before they have any type of, you know, the Futures or anything. And they go out there and do good right away. You're like, how in the heck? You know, you ride moto your whole life. And then they're like, oh, you got to be good at Supercross too. And there was no, you know, they could ride the test tracks or whatever, I'm sure. But there was no training facilities as much with Supercross tracks and stuff. And they're just almost like thrown to the wolves, where I'm like, dude, I don't know how people made it through back then compared to now, where at least, you know, you're able to, you have Moto Sandbox where you're training at, you can ride those tracks there. Then you have Futures and stuff like that, to where before I'm like, I'm glad we made this progression, because I don't know how some of these guys survived in the past.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, even the practice tracks, like, the tracks here at Moto Sandbox are pretty awesome, and they get rough, and it's realistic. They got everything pretty dialed. But I showed up at A2, and I was like, holy crap. Like, the first practice, it was like, yeah, this is nice. And then come around for the second one, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that track was, I remember I was there, and I was just looking at the track, and I was like, dude, we have Futures today. And it was so rutted. It was so, and it was pretty technical, it looked like. And everything was just so beat up, and they didn't fix a lot of that, especially that one rhythm section, kind of by the tunnel. And I'm just like, holy crap, this has got to be pretty gnarly for those guys.
Yeah, it was unlike anything I've ever ridden before.
So that's what I'll ask you. So you're at Moto Sandbox. You have guys like, I mean, Sexton's down there, Kitchen's down there. I know there's quite a few people at Moto Sandbox. Do you get a ride with those guys, or are you on a separate schedule with those guys? Can you see, you know, their speed and kind of gauge, you know, how you're progressing, or are you on a different schedule than them?
Obviously, preseason, they have two tracks, so they'd prep one track for the privateers and the amateurs, and then they'd have the pro tracks that they can test, or the other track that they can test on.
Gotcha.
The pros. But now, it's been, everybody's riding with everybody, so I've been getting to ride with Roxans and the Kitchens and the all those guys, and it's been really great. Levi Kitchen's been helping me out a little bit after he's done riding, and he just seeing, like, he's gone through the same things we're all going through, so he'll see one of us go through the whoops and say, hey, you should do this or you should do that.
Yeah.
That's been really, really, really helpful.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's cool, you know, you can watch them, and then you know, you try to emulate what they're doing. It's gotta be pretty wild just when you're sitting there maybe taking a breather and you're watching them and how easy they make it look. Like, you think of Roxen or something, even Kitchen, you see, like, oh, it doesn't look too bad. And then you go out there, you're like, I don't know how they're doing that. Do you ever get like that feeling where it's like, dude, how are these guys so good?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I study. I go out there. Like, I don't take breaks at my van. I'll go watch moto after moto. And I just study and see exactly where their body goes, what they're doing. And it's art. It's not riding a dirt bike. Like, Roxen is an artist.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, I think since I've been here, I've seen him made maybe 3 mistakes.
Yeah, it's wild. It's crazy how good these guys are. And well, so you jumped in. How long have you been riding Supercross? Like you mentioned, you rode A2 Futures. That was your first Futures race. How long have you been on Supercross, and how's that transition been? Has it been fun, or has it just been frustrating, or just all the above?
I rode a tiny bit of Supercross last year, like barely any, and it wasn't on a full tilt track either. And then this year I came down after I was home. I think I got down October 1st, to Kevin Windham's Farm 14.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Supercross. Like, I'm a Supercross guy. Like, I would much rather ride Supercross than outdoors.
A lot like, cleaner.
A lot cleaner. It's just like,
yeah,
I love how technical it is and how difficult it is, and not everybody can go super fast on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I enjoy that part of it. I enjoy the challenge. So probably October to now really is
okay.
The time I have on it. And the whoops are obviously the hardest part to figure out. Anybody can jump the rhythms.
Yeah.
But that
makes sense.
The whoops and really honestly bike setup is the hardest part that I've dealt with.
Yeah, I can imagine. It is still weird that, you know, you grow up racing motocross, you know, outdoors tracks pretty much your whole life, and then you get like, you've been on Supercross, you know, 6-7 months or whatever, and it's totally different, right? You mentioned bike setup, you're riding basically on bricks, you know, with how stiff your suspension is. And then and it looks like, to me, it looks like it'd be really fun, because once you get the rhythm down, it just seems like it'd be fun, you know, something that's not as taxing as riding outdoors. But at the same time, you always hear stories about guys where it's hard to breathe, you're holding your breath. And so it's just a lot to get used to. And I can imagine the whoops, right? Once you learn the rhythms that are the 3-5-3s and the certain how the tracks are set up, but the whoops, I'm sure when they're fresh, they're nice, but those, like those ones at A2 where you have holes and, you know, lines in the middle of them, it has to be pretty sketchy.
Yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. I, like you said, you hold your breath real bad. But when you first start, it's like, you have to consciously be like, okay, bud, take a breath. You're going to kill yourself out here.
Yeah.
But it's been super fun learning this transition. If you hit it on the left side, it's a little bit higher. If you hit it on the right side, it's got a little steeper transition, and like what the different sides and the dirt and like it. Mm-hmm. There's so much that goes into Supercross, and it's really, really been cool to learn, and starting to figure it out and feel more confident and like, yeah, I could jump that and I could do this. Like, I've always been a pretty quick send it guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely, like, Supercross, you have to be right or you're going to bite yourself in the butt. And like you said, it's not as taxing physically, I would say. It's mm-hmm. not as taxing, but mentally it is exhausting.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Because you have to think so quickly and, like, you can't lose focus for a second or you're going to be landing on your head.
Yeah. I mean, point proven, right? The race on Saturday with Forkner, he looked perfect the whole race. And he had that one tiny, you know, mistake where he just clipped or he just didn't go long enough and it dropped that front wheel and looked like his hand came off and he went for a ride. But before that, man, he looked perfect. It just that, I mean, he was maybe, you know, a foot short or something, and that's all it took. And the dude went for a nasty crash. So, you know, it's no joke with when you mentioned you got to be focused 100% of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Like, he was riding so good, and it was mm-hmm. great to see him back up there. It's awful to see him crash.
Ah, dude, yeah.
Terrible. Like, that was gnarly.
That was nasty.
So hard.
Dude. Yeah, I saw that. I was wondering, because I saw it live, but then they didn't show a replay, like, right away. I'm like, oh, that must be pretty bad. They finally showed it, you know, once the race ended, and it was just nasty. I'm just like, good Lord.
Yeah, he hit really, really hard. And
yeah,
and that just shows you he's one of the toughest guys in the industry.
It's wild. He's so fast, but he's just such the luck he's had the last couple of years. It's wild. It's, you know, it was cool to see him get back up there, you know, the beginning of the year. And I was like, cool, maybe, you know, maybe make it happen. Then he just has a get off. It's like, man, yeah, he's got to rebuild again.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy how many times he's got knocked down and Dude. He keeps getting up. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the first futures race you did at was at A2. Like you said, it wasn't the result you wanted. What was it, just so much nerves and being your first race in a stadium and just taking it all in, trying to be safe? Was it just so much that you were just trying to, you know, stay alive out there, where you know, now that maybe you know what to expect, that going into Daytona, that you'll be more ready?
For sure, the nerves were part of it. Obviously, I've never done one before, never ridden in the stadium besides 50s, but you're kind mm-hmm. of You know, I'm 50s.
Yes.
Before the first free practice, I was sitting in the tunnel shaking, like, full body. So first two practices were okay. Then the qualifying, I started to loosen up and ride a little better. And then obviously the second qualifying, I hit the ground pretty freaking good.
Oh, did you? I didn't see that.
I hit pretty hard, like really hard actually. And I had hurt my hand a little bit, like a bone bruise or whatever you want to call it, and it was super swollen going into the main. But I mean, I'm there to race, I'm gonna race. I didn't jump in California just to back out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then I got a good start in the main, and I was feeling decent going into it. And I was just, at that point, it's do what you can do and see what happens.
Like, yeah.
Basically, the pressure's off. Just see what you can do. And I was probably fifth to seventh in the first corner. And then the second corner before that first set of whoops, I went to cut down because everybody was pushing wide. And that's a no-no in the first lap of Supercross. And I did that. And there was somebody already coming up the inside, T-boned, and then we're on the ground. So
yeah,
I rode decent in the main, and I think I got back to 11th, and then I had a tip over again. But it's definitely a learning curve, and I think I'm in a lot better spot now going into Daytona. We've been putting in a lot of work with my bike and suspension. Todd with Factory Connection's been helping out a lot. So I feel like we're in a lot better spot going into this one. I'm feeling a lot better.
Yeah, and I can imagine going to the second one. Now you know what to expect. You know, you shake out the nerves, hopefully, on the first one. I'm sure you'll still be nervous on the second one, but it's not like the first one where it's just so overwhelming. And then you mentioned, like, in the main, you know, it's just trial and error, right? You know now that you're not going to cut down in the first lap, but I'm sure. Yeah, so I'm sure going to Daytona, you're probably just knowing how the program works and everything, that you'll probably be, you know, a lot more comfortable. And plus Daytona, it's got to be pretty cool. I mean, I don't know how much I would like to ride that track, because it looks awesome, but just with the lighting and everything and it being Supercross, but it you got to be pretty stoked to be on racing Daytona too, though.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's really cool to be able to race there. I think this is the first year they've done futures there.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's cool. And I think it'll be, and maybe it's a little bit more outdoorsy for you guys, but also what also I think makes it sketchy is it's a Supercross track on a track that deteriorates really bad. So that'll probably be something you guys need to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah. It's getting good.
Yeah. So I want to kind of go back. So you mentioned, the end of last year, you know, Loretta's, you got second in the Schoolboy 2 class band Cochran, and you were on that gas team for a couple of years, and this year you're not riding for you're still on the gas, but you're not on the program. Did you think, because of the results you had for last year, you know, you got that second in Schoolboy 2 band Cochran, and you know, you had some decent results over the year. Did you guys think you're going to have that same ride for this year, or was it something that you knew going in that you were already not going to have that team support, or was it kind of, you know, something last minute that happened that you found out about?
Honestly, I thought I would get a little bit more help because I did do pretty well last year. I won 3 championships at Spring Nationals. I won, I think, 4 regional championships at the regionals. And I was throwing down with the big guys all year without the factory engines and the spec motors and suspension and all that stuff. So I was expecting a little more help for this year, but they did offer to help out a little bit for this year, but it's at a point in my career where I feel like I could take it and then be locked into a contract, or I could just make do with what I have and be a free agent basically, and try to put in some results and get some more help, because at this point in my career, like, it's so hard to compete with the factory teams. Like, I think Loretta's, there was three factory cowies. Obviously, Casey's Rockstar.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like there's, then you got the NSA Yamahas. Like all those bikes are so good, and it was getting really hard to compete with the engines. But I mean, you just had to basically overcompensate and just keep working. And it's just getting harder and harder. So I feel like it's time to either get on a team or go back to fishing Alaska.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, it's got to be pretty frustrating. Obviously, you're one of the top amateur riders in the country, right? And so it's also weird how our sport is. And I always like to ask you guys that are coming up, or you get these results, you know, and you're doing, you had a great year. Like I said, you had a good result at Loretta's. You got second behind a guy on a factory bike and beat other guys that were on factory bikes. And does it get frustrating at times where it's, I don't want to say you want to be like, why me, you know, but like, do you ever look and when you get results like that, and then I don't know if the phone rang from any other teams after that or anything, but does it get frustrating where you're like, man, I'm doing all this, I got these good results, and still nothing kind of comes about? Is that something that frustrates you guys?
It's definitely frustrating, but I'm not a victim mentality, and I'm not going to go there and say why it's like, why are they picking this guy over me? Everybody puts in work, and everybody, I mean, you make your own luck. I believe that 100%. And honestly, I didn't get very many calls at all after Loretta's, which was a little bit surprising.
But, yeah, would be, yeah.
It's definitely a little bit frustrating and makes you think about what you're doing wrong and what people are thinking that they don't want to help you out, but it just motivates you to keep putting in work and working to get there. I mean, you can be like, oh, why me? Why doesn't anybody want to help me? Or you can just put your head down and go to work and make it to where they can't not help you.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So that's the goal for this year. So you're racing Supercross Futures. Are you racing the whole series? What are your plans for 2024? Or what are you hoping to do for this, you know, year as a whole?
Definitely planning to race all the Supercross Futures. I'm signed up for Daytona and St. Louis. I don't think they've sent out Foxborough yet, but I'm planning to race all those and the one in Utah. And then if those go well, I probably would be at the combines. And I don't know about Loretta's this year. Honestly, we're focused on futures, and we're going to kind of figure out the plan after that.
Are you stoked to do the combines too, or are you more focused on the futures for this year?
I've done two combines. I think they're really cool, but obviously Supercross is where the sport's going, I feel.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, that's where the money's at. That's where everybody's kind of looking. That's where all the eyes are. Which I think the combines are still super cool, but I'm definitely focused more on futures.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you look at a guy like Julien Bomer, where, you know, a year ago he was at Anaheim 1 futures or A2 futures, I can't remember it, and he was on a Yamaha. I mean, I think he had some support, but it wasn't anything crazy. And then next thing you know, he's on the Orange Brigade team. And then next thing you know, he's on Red Bull KTM. It's like, what? You know, and obviously he's a really, really good Supercross rider and a rider in general, but it is, I can see where you see how important the futures are, because the Supercross results are really the most important results that we have in our sport.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got Daxton Bennett here, and then look at what he's doing this year. Like, you got Juju, like, privateer, and then now he's full Red Bull KTM, like you said.
Yeah.
So I definitely think there's a lot of weight being thrown at Supercross Futures, which I think it's cool. I think that's where the sport's going, for sure.
Yeah, that'd have been a...
Okay. None of the factories want a guy that can't ride at Supercross.
Yeah, it's crazy. His story is wild, where it's like, man, what a year he had from, you know, riding it for his own bike to factory KTM in a year. I can't imagine that he expected that happen so quick, but it's cool to see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So you mentioned maybe not going to Loretta's. And I want to kind of touch on where you said this year is kind of like, get some results and some support or go back to Alaska fishing. That's one thing I like to ask you guys is you've been doing this a long time. You put a lot of pressure on yourself from training in Florida. You know, it's a big commitment on you and your family, and you're away from, home in Alaska. Have you gotten to a point to where you're just like, man, I'm done with this. I just want to go be a normal kid and live a normal life. Have you gotten to that point before, and what's kept you going?
I've definitely thought about it, but man, this is my dream and my passion, and this is what I want to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm decent at it, pretty good. So I want to just keep working and get to where I want to hear my name being shouted by the fans for opening ceremonies. Like, it's just every time you get to see all that, it's just like that. I want that to be me. I want to be the guy that's teaching little kids to get over their fears and help. Like, moto is so cool because you can help people, like, because you went through the same exact things as they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've always wanted to do this to just, it's my passion, my dream, and I know people struggle with the same things I struggle with. And it's just, I want to just prove it to myself that I can do it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people will count me out, and I feel like I'm not like a huge name guy, but I'm always there. I haven't won a lot. I mean, I'll be completely honest with you, but I mean, I'm always decent. I'm always there. I always have speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I haven't put all the pieces together to make it to where I'm the guy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, and I always think back, and I always like to talk about where you guys are still young. You're obviously really good at riding a dirt bike, and it's like, pursue this as long as you can. These real world jobs will, always be there. And, it's something when you get older that you can't go back to relive. So, I mean, man, with the talent that you guys have and, what you've been doing this for a long time, and you get into this level now where, you're almost to the pro class, and it's like, dude, stick it out, try, push it for years to come, because, you don't want to be, 25. You're like, man, I wish I would have tried, so it's like, you're young and try as long as you can. That's, financially can. And, if you make it, that's awesome. If not, you gave it all, but you don't want to look back when you're my age, be like, man, why did I go get a real job at 20? There's too much time for that. So just something to keep in mind.
For sure. You always want to stick it out as long as you can. But I don't want to be the guy that sticks around and just is barely making it by. I mean, I want to either be one of the guys and either be working to be one of the guys or just cut my losses and have love for the sport forever. But I don't want to stick around too long and just be those guys that you look at and you're like, man, love the guy, but he needs to give it up.
Yeah. Every year Anaheim, you're like, oh, he's not there again. No.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's cool, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you, coming on and sharing your story. Like I said, it's been fun to get to know you guys and see your progression over the years and just hear your story, because there's so many stories out there. But before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to give a shout out to, the people that support you and make it happen for you.
Yeah, I want to thank my dad. Obviously, he sacrificed so, so much for me to be here and taught me so much. I mean, I'm my own mechanic down here. He's back at home right now. And I want to thank Fox. They've always stuck by me. Monster, they're always great. I want to thank the Geek family. They've been letting me stay with them and helping me out. And it's been great to be here in Florida. And it takes a village for sure.
Well, cool, man. Like I said, it was good chatting with you. We'll keep an eye on you at Daytona this coming weekend. Stay safe, but yeah, good luck, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.